Optical fibres move light from one point to another in a rather nifty way. And I'm going to take you on a journey through inventions in your head, proposed inventions into your head, and then explain why the optical fibres are just such a fantastic invention. This is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific. This is part of my cardiac rehab, where I'm sort of developing the ability to speak coherently for a length of time on different topics, developing the techniques, developing the internet infrastructure of putting podcasts, and eventually I'll produce apps to hold them. And so I'm working broadly on this thing, and as with anything, the more you practice, the more you get some feedback and some understanding of things not working. You criticize, you do things and you say, oh look, that's not the best, or you attempt to do something and it's a stretch goal and you come back and say, oh look, I've missed that one. I've tried to do a podcast of something mathematical and it's sort of rather a labor of love to actually produce a podcast on that. So this one is a more a hands-on podcast, even though it's all conceptual. So let's start. Optical fibers take light from a source, ultimately to a detector. Like from if you've got a candle across the room, the light is produced in the candle flame and it reaches your eye through the detector. And so the simplest idea is to get light is you just simply shine it through free space or air or liquid in it. It travels from here to over there. Now it's got this unfortunate problem is that light traveling in free space paints a whole area. So if you light a light globe, that light globe will fill and light up the whole room. Then if the room is bigger, it will light up more and more with less and less intense light. And so optical fibers, something which is sort of a solution to this, something called the inverse square law, and we'll have a look at it at the moment. But then we've got the problem of that I want to get light, I want to get it around a corner, so my detector is around the corner out of view. So you can think of the next thing is that I put a big mirror, and indeed that will work. You shine your light, the light hits a mirror, the light then bends around the corner, and I could actually send a signal. It could be light shining like my face. You could actually see light shone to my face, and my face then is shone. You can see my face there, and you can lip read and could use signals like that. Or I could have a paddle, a ping pong ball bat with a white and black face, and I could rotate that very fast, and you could write down a Morse code of it. In a sense, there's a Morse code is a very primitive form of digital communication, believe it or not. And Morse code is sort of almost digital, it's not a binary. It's almost on the edge of being binary because there's D, da, and blank if you have to actually add it. Add it together, three types of signal in there in Morse code. I could communicate it there. Now, if I could then have three or four corners, around three or four, I could have three or four mirrors. But then if I'm moving about the place, I want to get light down, I could actually think of an idea of a hollow tube with really shiny edges, and I flash my light and it will go down, bounce down that thing, it will reflect once, twice, three times. Now, ideally, reflectors, unfortunately, at best have a 99% efficiency, or depending on the wavelengths, you can get a very high efficiency reflector. But by the time you reflect something 100 times, you don't have actually very much light if you add that. If you put 0.99 and times 0.99 and kept on pressing the equal function in the calculator, you'll very quickly get very little light going through. So reflection is a problem. But this light pipe idea means the light pipe's flexible. I can actually move it around. So as I walk around, I can still see the light. Now, there's a few problems there. One is something called attenuation due to reflection, because that's not the ideal thing. But there's another thing to worry about, is that if you put a pulse of light, it's got many different paths it can reach to you. So you put a nice little pulse to the light, and what will happen is that light will diminish, but it will also take different amounts of time to get there. So I don't know how to do it. It's sort of like if I go beep, go boop, and not changing frequency, but that's taking a much longer time there, which is okay, but it actually limits the number of beeps per second, because if you do too many beeps, they'll actually close up and become a blur, become confused. And so a light pipe, or as we call it, multimode fiber, that is, light can reach you in one way, and it can reach you in another mode, different mode. The light has got a beautiful big light pipe. It can take light going in at different modes. You can launch it in different ways in the light pipe, but it'll give different arrival times. So far as data is concerned, this has got a data window on top of it. What we could do is something a little bit more sophisticated, is that we could arrange this table of continual lenses. So the light fills a lens, and what happens is that all the light then focuses to a point. Now, there's no time delay associated with that, because there's a theorem that says that a lens operates by actually ensuring that light will arrive at the same point and at the same time. And if you think about it, light going right through the barrel, the lens actually encounters a thicker lens, it slows down a bit more, spends more time in the glass. And so by the time you get there, your pulse is conserved in terms of intensity. The intensity, if you fill a lens, it will go down to a point and then fill another lens. And in terms of time. So that this is a way to get high speed light down, is have a series of lenses. And what you could do is that you can shrink the lenses smaller and smaller and have a smaller and smaller distance between them, and actually extend it to a continuous lens, that is a continuous tube of glass, which is an extruded lens. And that's what an optical fiber is, but instead of a thicker glass in the center, we've got a thicker refractive index in the center. And this is a thing called refraction, that is the bending of light. Lenses, optical fibers bend light. Now unfortunately, in our high school physics book, we have light reflecting in an optical fiber, bounces off the corners, and a ray of light bouncing off the corners. But that's not what actually happens in an optical fiber. In fact, that would be a disaster. And so light, basically you focus light in a onto this lens, and at the right angle you can launch it onto the axis of this lens, and it will stay curved onto this lens. And as the fiber bends, the light will also bend around and stick on the very center of it. Now, one can imagine light rays, you have to actually throw that away, and essentially it goes back. Unfortunately, I keep on mentioning it to very much quantum mechanics. You actually excite a Gaussian, for a single mode, you excite a Gaussian mode of light on the center. So when you focus it down, you throw out ray optics and have something called Gaussian optics. It's a wavefront, and in fact the optical fiber is a wave guide, and it can go along the place. Now, I don't know if you've seen thin glass, and then glass at a bank and an aquarium. Glass gets greener and greener, and you can imagine that I might be able to basically see through a meter of glass. But how have they done it? This waveguide idea, how have they done it such that I can see 600 meters? Sorry, 600. Sorry, should I say six? Did I say 600 meters? That's nothing. 600 kilometers of optical fiber. I can shine it down through there. That must be very, very pure glass that doesn't absorb. Now, it's pure glass, but it's obviously doped with some metal. So glass is basically silicon dioxide and metal, and the silicon dioxide and metal, the more metal you add them, the greater the refractive index, the greater lens bending property it does have. So in the very center you have a slightly higher refractive index, but the mystery is what technology did they use to actually make ultra pure glass? And one thinks of purification, you get something messy like sand in a sandpit, and you sieve it and you just remove impurities. And so you can get something very pure by purifying it, or you can actually and then eventually you get to something which is made up of only things from atoms from the periodic table associated with, there's no other atom, impurity atoms there. Or you could do what they actually did, is actually start off with a gas of silicon, and oxygen, burn them together, and the water's driven off, and you've given a little cloud of pure sand made straight from the periodic table. So rather than from going from what nature has given us and actually trying to purify it, we've actually gone to the periodic table, identified things, and used this gas. It's called a fume and a frit, and there are several ways you can do it. There's the way that you can get the base core optical fiber, and you can actually paint it with this frit, where you burn the sand on it. It lands as a dust, very fine dust. It heats up and makes this ultra pure quartz, which doesn't absorb any light. Or you can do, and that's for if you have to produce fairly cheap but large quantities of optical fibers, which is the standard optical fibers to connect two points together. Or if you want to really shape the core, shape the elements involved, you get a quartz tube, which is made of ultra pure quartz through a process. It's a tube, and you suck up all the air, and in the inside you blow this silicon frit through with a small amount of elements, say boron or fluorine or erbium, some of the things you put it into it, and as it's flowing through, you heat it up, and the frit forms a glaze on the inside, and this forms a glaze on the inside, and then at the end of the point, you then turn on the vacuum pumps on the outside and actually heat it up, and the glass will pull in, the surface tension of the glass will pull in on the vacuum in there. There's no gas in there, and it will actually form a solid tube, but with this high refractive index core in the center. It's actually called the core. And if you hold one of these tubes, so essentially a glass the size of a small Coke bottle, or a Coke bottle, if you can imagine that amount of glass, can be made into a preform, a rod of glass. It's about 2-3 centimeters across with this core on the inside. And you can actually physically see the core. You lift up and you can see the core, because it's a massive million or several thousand times the size of a real optical fiber. And then we use the other property of glass, that it is viscous. It doesn't turn to liquid. It becomes hard to flow. And so what you do with that is that you heat it up and you pinch it, and while it's still like toffee, if you've ever had toffee, you can actually pull these little strands of sugar, And what you do is you pull it out and you have this machine measuring the diameter of it to an incredible quantity, and that actually changes the temperature a little bit, or changes the pressure a little bit, and so it draws out this optical fiber. So your Coke bottle can actually be drawn out to an optical fiber 600 kilometers long. Now, of course, glass will break. So around this, as it's been drawn out straight, you can't bend it because it will break. You put coating machine, and it's acrylate. It's a two-part, it's a UV-cured epoxy. And so what happens is epoxy goes on the surface, and then it hits, it's like it's drained on the surface to a correct thickness, and then a UV lamp hits it and cures it. And then you've got your clad and coated fiber with a core in the center, and that's drawn out onto a drum at the center. So you've got this large piece of toffee preform, and it goes down, and you can convert a Coke bottle into 6 kilometers of pure optical fiber. And the optical fiber is very, very pure, simply because it's been made straight from the periodic table. There's been no chance of impurities, a snail or something like that walking in and forming. And so that's how optical fibers are made. And that's how they operate. They're a long continuous lens. They operate by refraction. They're a waveguide. They don't have, as you will see in your school textbooks, they don't have a ray of light entering at an angle and bouncing up several times in straight lines all the way through. That's a complete, it's lazy, and I think the word I'm going to say is arrogant. The fact that through generations, you have scientists say, well, look, this textbook's incorrect. I don't think you should be teaching this. And the response is always, well, you don't know what you're talking about. This has been in the textbook for a long time. Whatever the equation thing is, the end result of that, if you summed that conversation from beginning to end and subtracted everything, you'd be left with a certain amount of arrogance that they don't have to actually research, they don't have to understand. They're in a space where this is not necessary. But in this podcast world, where I can transfer information to you directly, it's worthwhile knowing about this beautiful thing called an optical fiber, which is a extruded lens. That's what it is. It's an extruded lens, and it's a lens just on the edge of not being a lens. So what it is, it's a lens, and it can only carry one mode of light. It's so small, so tiny, it can carry light efficiently, but it can't do anything else. And so only one solution for light comes out. And so if you put a pulse in, you'll get a pulse out the other side. Now, there's a caveat to that, and I'll discuss that in a following podcast. So I hope this has been useful. It's been useful for me to speak coherently and on a point for a while, and actually try to talk to the podcast medium and try and explain things. Hopefully I'll be a bit more successful, and of course I'm pushing the boundaries, trying to describe complex processes, optics, even equations. So in the meantime, if you're confused or whatever it is, please, if it's a stimulus for you to look up and read articles about it, that's good. If it's helped you understand, that's even better. But the most important thing is keep on teaching and keep on thinking science. Thanks for listening.